Hi, folks. I'm Jalene Fenner here with my co-host,
Tom Bajur.
And Tom, we are doing a special four-part series called Is Your Estate Planned?
Very important question because many people's estates are not planned.
Well, that's right. And we've been talking about wills and testaments, trusts, general power of attorney. And today is segment four that we're going to spend more time regarding power of attorney, but it's called a durable power of attorney for healthcare.
Could be the most important part of the document package.
We will find out. And to help us with this series has been Joel Nephew, who is the Director of Planned Giving and Trust Services for the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
It's good to be back with you again.
And we have an attorney because you have to have the proper documents. And it's an attorney, an estate planning attorney. Matt Ramosco is here.
Great to be here again.
And you've been doing estate planning for how long?
Over 20 years.
So I'd say he's an expert, wouldn't you?
I do.
Last segment was about general power of attorney.
Yes.
Today we're talking about durable power of attorney for healthcare. What does that mean, Matt?
Well, I'll give you the definition. In that, it's a written document in which directs the type of care that an individual wants and the person to carry it out. Now, in Michigan, we have a specific statute for durable powers of attorney for healthcare. We've had it since the 90s. And really, Tom indicated correctly, this is the most important document you have. The last three series, we talked about stuff, material possessions. But this is what type of care you want or don't want in the event you're unable to make your decision. And this one, usually, you can only get right once.
What do you mean you can only get right once?
Well, if I indicate that I want to be kept alive no matter what, and somebody makes a contrary decision, that one's a little bit hard to undo.
So what other names are this durable power of attorney for healthcare called, maybe in other states or even within our own state?
In our own state and in other states, we hear them as advanced directives. Living wills are my favorite. You always hear, I have a living will.
Well, yeah, what's that mean?
You have a durable power of attorney for healthcare.
There you go.
Some people call them also resuscitate or do not resuscitate orders. Those aren't really correct because that's what really the hospital calls them. In general, now we just refer to them as durable powers of attorney for healthcare because it deals with your general health.
This says durable power of attorney. Durable or non-durable? What's that?
This one's only going to be durable because it's effective upon your disability, and it doesn't matter if you're disabled through the process. Remember when we talked about general powers of attorney? I'm sharing my rights with you if you're my agent. In this case, we refer to you as a different term. You're actually my patient advocate. I'm considered the patient. So I'm sharing my rights with you, but only when I'm disabled. If I have the ability to make my medical decisions, I'm going to make them. You're only going to step in as my patient advocate if I have no ability, either because I'm unconscious or I am taking medication where I cannot make a good medical decision. And sometimes it's a pain management issue too. If I'm in such pain that I can't make clear and convincing decisions, somebody should be stepping up in that.
Recently, I had surgery. I had my gallbladder taken out. It kind of was an emergency. My husband was there, but I remember them asking me this, and it seems like I was in the hospital again. My mother used to tell me, it's tough getting old, Jalene, and all of a sudden, the last year or two, I've had all these medical issues. But I remember at the hospital, they always ask, yes, do you have a living will? Do you have a, you know, a durable power of attorney for health care? I mean, I'm both different. Same thing they mean, but they have called them different things.
Right.
If I say yes, then they'd like to make sure that they have a copy of it, right?
They do. And I'm surprised that it's only the hospital because my doctor, who's a friend of mine, bothers me about this for years. Well, I had it done. It was just one of those things, you know, you have to send on your email to do it. You know, what they're really looking for is risk management. I've got a good friend that's involved in the hospital situation where he is higher up in one of the organizations, and they want these documentations. If I put in my documents that if I'm comatose for a time period that I don't want my life prolonged or under certain circumstances I don't want life-sustaining procedures, the hospital really would like that document in their file for risk management so people in the future don't come back and say, you made a wrong decision with mom and dad, we're going to sue you. The other thing that you run into with these documents is you really want to make sure that they're clear and that everybody that reads them can understand them.
Now, what do you mean?
Well, if I make a decision that I want life support taken off in certain circumstances, I want to make sure that that is specifically provided in the document. And what the law says is if I want my life terminated, if I don't want life-sustaining treatment, I have to do so in a clear and convincing manner. That's a pretty high standard. So how I handle these, at least in my documents, I know some other attorneys do this, is I do a check the box. And that is, here are the choices I have. And I actually have the client check the box on what they want or they select and they sign under it. That's pretty clear and convincing. They want this choice, but they also had these opportunities to make these choices and they don't want them. In my mind, we want to make that as clear to the person that's reading the document as we can.
But how do I know what's going to happen to my health if I might not want to be resuscitated, but then something else might happen to me? Yeah, and you can resuscitate me. I want you to.
The other thing to do is just give discretion to your patient advocate and talk to them about situations. Again, this is, you know, those uncomfortable Thanksgiving dinner discussions, but I would have it at other times. And that's why some people really are reluctant to do these. But you get a lot of pressure. And when you're in the hospital, you're not feeling well. This is not that time to make those decisions. You need to reflect on it, make that decision. You need to talk to your patient advocate.
You know, I've noticed that from personal experience dealing with family members, they check the box differently at different times if they were under duress or not from family, but if they were feeling sick, they had one feeling, and then maybe when they were in the lawyer's office signing it, they kind of filled out similar questions in a different manner. Joel, you had a thought?
Yeah, I just want to piggyback on what Matt was saying about talking to the patient advocate and the rest of the family so that the whole family knows this is who the patient advocate is. This is what I want done. So it's very clear to everyone, the children, your spouse, anyone else that might be at your bedside at that time. Again, it just mitigates the confusion and the chaos at that time if we just communicate clearly.
Sounds like communication the family should be doing all of their lives together.
Yes.
So, Joel, when should a person consider making this durable power of attorney for their health care?
Well, our pet answer has been today, right? It is something that you need to do as soon as possible. Don't just say, well, I'll do that. So I feel great. Why should I? I'm not going to the hospital. But it's like what happened to me, I think it was 3 years ago, when I fell off a ladder, broke my ribs, and punctured my lung. I wasn't planning on that day. But I'm glad I had the document in place, because then, as I was in the hospital,
accidents
happen. They do.
I'm just curious, if you're having some sort of surgery, and it seems like even minor type of surgery with a hospital and stuff, you have a durable power attorney or a similar document. Is it a one-time fits-all? I mean, you use that, so the next time you go to someplace else, does that cover you for the rest of your life for every circumstance, or do you need to get with Joel and get a broader document for larger all-purpose consideration?
I like the broader document, and you made a really good point, and that is you're going to change your mind potentially in the future. The decisions that you have for your health when you're younger are much different as you get older. Talk to a young person that's under 30 years old. They're immortal, right?
Right, right.
Especially if you talk to somebody 18, 19 years old. Their ideas of what they may want at that time might be different than somebody that's in their 50s, 60s, or 70s. Mm-hmm. The other thing is your life experience. As we see our parents get older, our friends are getting older. I'm also amazed. When we get together at reunions, there's all these older people.
Yeah, where did they come from, huh?
I don't understand that. And we talked about that a little bit during the break. As we get older, our perspective on this really changes. The other thing is, at least with my documents, I've seen a number of other attorneys do this, is I put a reaffirmation section. So let's say you did your document a number of years ago. When you bring it in, you may want to re-sign it just to reaffirm that that's still what I want. And if it isn't, that's fine. We can do another document. And again, the hospitals are really requesting that. When I went in for surgery a number of years ago, I brought my document in because it was required for your pre-screening. I asked them, you know, do you want me to re-sign this? Their policy was within 36 months, 3 years, they said no. But that's just one hospital's perspective.
What if I go on vacation? Should I take my durable power attorney? Should I keep put it there with my passport or whatever?
You should. Michigan's got this specific statute, and where this came from is when Jack Kevorkian was acting in Michigan. This was the legislature's way of addressing the whole euthanasia issue. And so Michigan's very precise on this. Now, the document I do, and again, a number of attorneys also do this, mine says this is going to be based on Michigan law. So we have a statute, and this allows us to do this. But I would request that any other jurisdiction take this into account. Now, if you go to Mayo Clinic, they will accept it. Cleveland Clinic, they will accept it. When you get into Florida, you know, they had that whole Terry Schiavo issue. It also depends on which area in Florida you're in. One part's a little bit more conservative than the other part in Florida.
So let me just kind of follow up with that. Take it with you on vacation when you're overseas and your medical records and your durable power attorney might not be as accessible. But if I'm going to Grand Rapids or Detroit, I don't carry my durable power attorney with me. But if I go to Florida, you just mentioned, or if I go someplace else, how much of that should be part of my standard packing for my vacation?
It should be part of it. And in Michigan, even, I tell people, put it in an envelope, put it in your mailbox, put DOP for health, durable power of attorney for health. And at least some of the EMTs I've worked with in the past, they'll go through your glove box.
Okay, so your glove box is one of those places to have a copy of your durable power of attorney.
And always give it to your patient advocates. And the other thing is, again, if this is on drafting, your durable power of attorney should say that a photocopy is just as good as the original. And I like language in there that says an electronic version is just as good as the original. I've got to say, probably about every other month, I'll get a phone call from a family member that says, I'm the patient advocate. Look in your file. My parents gave you authority to talk to me. Can you email this to this doctor's office or this hospital? And we do that.
You know, I think a takeaway, Jelaine, from this program is we all have an assignment that we all need to put one in our glove compartment. We need to put one maybe in your purse and maybe in my wallet or whatever that is. We need to really think and find out where that document is.
Joel, what's the title of this person?
Okay, so the title is patient advocate. And when you think of the word advocate, you know, that's like an intercessor. That's someone who stands in the gap. That person would be acting when you're not able to act. As Matt mentioned, either medication has you in la-la land or you're in a coma. This person is going to be your voice at that time. So the patient advocate, and again, just to emphasize, it's important you dialogue with that individual before their services are needed so they know not just what's on paper, but that your thoughts and that paper are connected.
So how do you pick this person?
Carefully. Sometimes people are, well, I'll just pick my oldest child. Well, that might be okay, and then it might not be, because that oldest child may not be the one who has the strength to pull that plug if that was your desire, because they don't want to see dad die. They don't want to see mom die. So you need someone who loves you, but someone who also respects your wishes over their own. And so that could be a brother. It could be even a best friend. It could be your spouse. It could be your child. But, you know, the short answer is very carefully and prayerfully, you know, consider who that would be and talk to them.
Right, because you want to make sure that you just said you can have in writing what it says, but is that what you're still thinking? I mean, you've talked to them, they know. And sometimes, I mean, just when you said you and your oldest child, you want them to have your best interest
right
Because sometimes, you know, well, yeah, they're in a coma and they're not doing so good. Well, we should just pull the plug because...
Yeah, I got to get back to work, you know. Yeah. I can't be standing in the hospital all these days. Just pull the plug, you know. Yeah. Well, you know, is that...
Right. Yeah. So it's an important... When we've talked about the wills and the trusts and all this, this is something you have done at that time, correct, Matt?
Yes. And so your whole estate planning package should include not only your will or trust, your general durable powers of attorney, but also your power of attorney for healthcare. And like when we were setting up this program, we put this last because I think it is your most important document. When I do an estate plan for somebody, I spend just as much time on this document, sometimes more than even their will.
Well, because it is very important. Like, you know, Joel, you said somebody you trust and they're going to do what you say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Matt, we're going to ask you this question. This is kind of the obvious question and answer, but it needs to be stated. Do you need to notify these people before you assign them to this appointment?
Absolutely. And you also have them signing acknowledgement. They acknowledge their powers, and they also acknowledge that you can fire them and that they can quit. My first patient advocate that I ever designated said no. He was a doctor, and we had vacationed a couple times together, a friend of mine, and I thought, you know, he's the ideal person. You know, he said, thinking with his oath that he had taken as being a healthcare provider, he was really uncomfortable with my decision at the time. Put in the document.
Yeah, because if you, like, don't do anything, you know, the non-resuscitate, and a doctor has a really hard time because, like you're saying, their oath is to try to keep somebody alive and get them well.
Right. And, you know, at that time, my lifestyle was a little different, and I was doing a little bit more dangerous things, and I didn't want to be somebody that was a quadriplegic or something like that. Not that that's a lifestyle that's wrong. Just for me and my thought process at that time, that's not where I wanted to be. Of course, my ideals have changed 20 years later. But it's really interesting how you really have to have that interaction with somebody, and their thought process may change too. You know, you have to realize somebody that says yes today may not still agree years later.
So this is why you need to talk to these people. That's what you were saying, Joel. You
right.
really need to... You know, have this conversation, talk to them.
And Jelaine, it's not just a one-time conversation, as Matt was alluding to. This is something that every so often, are you still comfortable with my decisions that I have? You know, or I've changed my decision. You know, before I said just pull the plug. Now I'm not so sure because, you know, grandkids are around. I might, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. It's that communication, keeping the communication continuous is important.
And it's a two-way street because if you're the patient advocate, you want to really confirm with the person that designated you to. And you may want to say, hey, you talked to me about this a couple of years ago. What's your ideas? Have you made any changes? Are you still comfortable? Are you still thinking the same line that you were before? So it's really a two-way communication. And you don't see that as much in the other estate planning documents. You know, there's very few times I've ever had somebody come up to me and say, hey, am I still on your will and I'm still number 4 in charge? But again, that's material things with your will, where in this we're really talking about healthcare issues.
So let's talk about, can a patient advocate receive compensation? Because this could be a long-term thing.
Yeah, for instance, if Terry Scheibel, how many years, was that a couple years situation?
It was a long time.
And this can be very intense. I mean, the life and death, I mean, if you're that patient advocate, there's probably something wrong, and it's probably pretty intensive. So there's the emotional cost, there's time, and so there could be quite a bit. Can you be paid to do this?
You can't receive direct compensation. Again, if we think of the genesis of where this came from, the Jack Kevorkian concept, they didn't want Jack Kevorkian to get paid for what he was doing. But you can be reimbursed for necessary expenses. So if you're traveling out of state, if you've got out-of-pocket expenses, obviously you can get reimbursed for those. But I don't know many people that want to be a professional patient advocate for the money.
So we've kind of talked about this, or alluded to it, but can they quit and can you fire them?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
And you want it both ways, right? Ideals change over time. And you may not be comfortable with that person being your patient advocate, and they may not be comfortable with the decision. You know, we say generally you review your estate plan every 5 years. That's too long for this document. This is should be at longest an annual review.
That's much more frequent than I thought.
Yeah, things can change. I mean, you know, being the patient can rethink what's been going on or how what you... Or then you see this person that you asked them and you were happy with, you know, they would fill your wishes, but then you're seeing something in them or maybe they've said something. You're like, I don't know if I want them to be in charge of my health.
Absolutely. And like your example, as you get more procedures or you're involved in the medical care more, your ideas may change.
Durable power of attorney for healthcare, you can change it as much as you want, correct?
Yes. Now, this is one of the few documents I don't like amending. I just like revoking and doing a new one. Now, there is an example where you would probably amend it, and that is, at least in my document, you have to check the boxes. Some people don't want to make a decision right now. They'll just sign it and give broad discretion to their patient advocate. But when they go into the hospital, they may check one of the boxes. Well, that's technically amending the document. But again, you have to make sure you let your patient advocate know, hey, by the way, the copy I gave you a month or a couple of years ago, it's different now. And again, you want to make sure that they are accepting that. And again, with that document too, I usually tell the person, sign your reaffirmation area initial.
So yeah, you're having the patient advocate also sign.
Yes.
So they know what the person's asking them to do or not to do.
Yes, a new acceptance. And again, communication is just so key in this, like Joel was indicating. The two most important things are picking the right person and communicating with that person.
You know, we're kind of short in the society and in our relationships and family on communication. And in some ways, as difficult as these decisions of all four parts of the series, especially when you have wills and trusts and financial and now a general, and now we're going to the healthcare. Families need to communicate. People need to communicate. This might be actually an opportunity to raise your relationships to a higher level, and not hurt it, actually help it.
It really is. And I think that's one of the fears that people have why they don't want to do this is you got to start that dialogue. But I think once they do it, most of the response I get is positive. You know, because this opens up so many other aspects of your life. You talk about stewardship. You talk about your faith. You talk about issues that you may have never really talked about in depth before.
This is to talk about your values.
Absolutely.
And there's really nothing more important than your value system.
Right. And you find out what people's character are. And it gives you time to really talk to them about certain issues. And what's kind of funny, we talked about this before in a previous segment. You really understand what people's thoughts are when you start talking about financial matters.
We're not talking about the weather anymore.
No, we're not talking about the weather. You get a better sense of relationships and you see where there's holes that you can maybe mend or fix.
A lot better than Facebook.
So that's a question I have. You have your durable power of attorney.
Yes.
Which could be one person.
Yes.
And then the healthcare could be a different.
Absolutely.
Or they could be the same.
They could be the same, but you don't often see that. And especially in friends and family, you know, we have those friends that we go to for financial matters or advice. And then we have those people that are more compassionate or more strong with their backbone, I usually like to say. Those are sometimes the people that you look to for your power of attorney for healthcare. The one other thing that I always tell people is don't pick multiple people. Pick one.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a committee decision.
So what happens if you don't have this durable power of attorney for your health care and you needed one?
Terry Schiavo is still just the great example of what happens when you don't have your documents.
It tears the family apart sometimes.
It tears the family apart and you ultimately forget the focus and that is on the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And you have specific wishes that probably aren't going to be carried out. Now, you can go to the court, but really the judge's first question is, can't you guys resolve this because I don't want to make this decision? And that's a wise judge.
So, Joel, if a person wants to make a power of attorney document for their health care,
what can they do? They can contact the Machine Conference of Seventh-day Adventist Plan Giving Trust Services Department. Call us at 517-316-1520, and we'll be glad to dialogue with you on how we can help process this. If we can't handle it in our office, we'll help you find someone locally, an attorney that can draw that document up for you.
So anybody has any questions about any of these, this whole series we've had, they can give your department a call. That's the Plan Giving and Trust Services, and the number is 517-316-1520. So we've been talking about, is your estate planned? And Tom, you said majority of people probably don't have an estate that's planned. And that's when people get in trouble, right?
It is when people get in trouble.
Well, after this program, we know that we'll flip that number upside down and there'll be more people with it rather than less.
I hope so.
I do too. Well, it's been great talking to both of you guys, and this has been very educational. And I'm sure we're going to have listeners that are going to have questions. And if you will call the station, we're going to just refer you back to Joel's department. And that number is 517-316-1520. If you have any questions about powers of attorney, wills, testament, they can give you some answers or help direct you where you can get the answers you need. Thank you, listeners. You have a great day.
Bye now.